Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MBOM podcast. I'm so glad you've decided to join me for today's episode. Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Ceteris. Tax season is here, and as a yoga entrepreneur, dealing with your finances, accounting, and tax preparation can take you away from focusing on the rest of your business. Doing your own books and taxes is an unnecessary risk, and you can save valuable time and money by outsourcing your accounting and tax preparation. Ceteris specializes in accounting and tax preparation for yoga businesses. This is a complete done-for-you solution with no work on your end. You'll have access to your financials online, including a mobile app. You get the information you need to make better business decisions with their secure cloud-based platform. And they combine people and technology so you always have someone to talk to when you need to. If that wasn't enough, Ceteris gives you full access to your financial data and benchmarked reporting through their platform, Ceteris Edge, which is built on top of QuickBooks Online and integrates with MindBody Online. To learn more about Ceteris' fitness business accounting and benchmark reporting solution, please visit www.ceteris.com/MBOM. It's CETERUS.com/MBOM. If you sign up through this podcast, you'll get 50% off your first 2 months. And hey, who doesn't want something like that during tax season? This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by Fave Yogis. Here's a business tool that's really going to change the lives of yoga teachers. Do you teach yoga? Then this app is for you. The Fave Yogis app puts control and freedom in your hands. Update your class schedule, offer your own classes anywhere, anytime, and get paid all from your phone. No more updating your schedule in multiple places for students to maybe stumble across it. Students simply open Fave Yogis and your schedule will be there. With Fave Yogis, you can receive donations or tips from students, send student notifications about class updates, set prices and ticket availability, and auto send reminders to students. Just your yoga, teachers add classes, students add teachers and teachers stay connected. Head on over to your app store and get the Fave Yogis app for free. It's FAVYOGIS. And when you sign up, use code MBOM and let them know that I sent you. Now, before we dive into today's guest for the episode, just one more quick announcement. I'm super excited to be putting on a workshop with Kelly Smith from Yoga for You Online. It's called Elevate Your Yoga Biz, and it's 4 online workshops that we're doing from April 17th to May 8th. So Tuesdays, 7 p.m., 1 hour. If you can't make it in person, you can still register and you'll get the recording sent to your inbox immediately after the webinar is over. And so what is it all about? It's designed for you, yoga teachers, who want to grow and expand your current yoga businesses. Each module of the workshop we'll focus on a different topic to help you accelerate your business. We're talking about building your brand, designing and creating unique classes that fill, taking your business online and growing your online presence, and streamlining your yoga business. This means that we're going to look at your current brand, we're going to audit it, we're going to build it if you don't have it. We're going to look at what classes are filling and what aren't and talk about ways to actually get people showing up in the door. We're going to talk about building additional revenue streams with online businesses, growing your social media presence, and just finding more clients. Finally, we're going to talk about how to not burn out, how to have a busy schedule that allows you to still do the things you love. So if this is something that interests you, we've set it at a super affordable rate. The biggest piece of feedback we've gotten back from you is that you can't afford these expensive offerings, these expensive trainings. So we heard that. So it's the investment is $30 per module or $99 for all 4 modules. And you can choose if you want to do all 4 or just a couple of them. So if you are interested in learning more or registering, you can head on over to bit.ly.com/yogabizworkshop. So that's yoga, B-I-Z, workshop. And yes, I said Z, I'm Canadian. Now on to today's guest on the podcast. I'm so excited to be joined by Josh and Jenna from Nomad Yoga Family. We connected via Instagram and I immediately resonated with their story. They're actually from super, super close to where I'm from in Alberta. They had a yoga studio up in Red Deer, Alberta, which is just a couple hours north of where I grew up. And since then, they've sold their yoga studio, they bought an RV, they've driven all around North America with their two children, and now they're nomads living in Sayulita, Mexico. So definitely have lots in common. And on top of that, they're super passionate about the business side of yoga. Josh and Jenna work with yoga studios and yoga teachers, helping them build their businesses and be successful, whether or not they want to work with it within one community or if they want to be traveling yoga teachers. So on this episode of the podcast, we dive into their story, their travels, how they set up a remote life, as well as tips and tricks for owning a successful yoga studio and being a successful yoga teacher. So without further ado, here's Josh and Jenna. I'm very excited to be joined on the podcast today by Josh and Jenna from Nomad Yoga Family. Welcome to the show today, guys.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And where are you guys joining me from today?
We are currently in Sayulita, Mexico.
Very
cool.
So
just north of Puerto Vallarta.
Awesome. Yeah, I've only been there one time for one day, but I've heard absolutely amazing things about it.
It's got a good blend of factors. You can surf and there's good stuff for the kids and
tons of yoga.
Lots of yoga and lots of workspace. So it's for a beach town, it's got kind of what you're looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. And I definitely want to dive into, you know, what your business is all about and how you guys ended up in Sayulita. But I want to back up a little bit and talk about, you know, your yoga story. Like, how did you guys first get into yoga?
I had been practicing yoga kind of on and off, like one class a week when I was going to school in Victoria. And then I moved to Kingston to do my master's at Queen's, and it was like a super cold winter and I was not in the most positive space. And I started practicing hot yoga, Bikram yoga, and I just like dove headfirst into a 30-day challenge and had just never felt so good before in my life as when I was practicing that yoga regularly. So like 6 months later, I finished my master's, and instead of going on in school, I went to teacher training and didn't really know what was going to happen, but started teaching. And a couple of years later, Josh and I were together and opened a yoga studio.
Wow, that's amazing.
I started yoga quite young. I was in kind of from a yoga family of sorts. My dad teaches Ashtanga yoga and yin yoga. And when I was a kid, used to go to see Patavi Joyce and go back and forth to India quite a bit. And but I hated it. I really did not like practicing at all. I was like a stiff hockey playing dude with injuries and broken stuff. And so it was usually really embarrassing for me. But then Jenna dragged me to a hot class, a Bikram class too. And the idea of it was insane. Like, why, if I don't like it already, why would we do it in the heat? But, you know, I could finally move. And then the big thing was, so I started practicing, same thing, like got into a challenge. And the big thing was, all of a sudden, a lot of my like pains in my body weren't there and I could move more. And then, of course, there's just sort of unlimited positive repercussion from regular practice, sort of mentally as well. And I got hooked, and now we're in. So then same thing, I went to teacher training, and then we opened, we were managing a school, and then we opened our school, and we helped build a couple other studios and helped a couple other people with their businesses. And so that's what we've been doing. And then since selling our studio a couple of years ago, we've been traveling full time. And in the last year and a half or so, we've been to over 100 wellness places, 100 yoga studios, basically. So it's been cool to like be a student and be a teacher and be a studio owner and then be on the ground in the industry as well and sort of see what's going on and what people are doing and try a lot of different styles and what's happening in different areas. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's an amazing like array of experiences to have had in the industry. And so when you guys first started teaching, were you guys teaching Bikram or did you guys do your training in a different style?
We both went to the Bikram teacher training. So that's primarily what we teach. We are exploring a lot of different styles, and depending on where we teach, it may be more based on the Bikram series and sometimes less. But yeah, that's the primary modality that we teach. And that's really like our go-to practice for all around just, you know, feeling good. So that's like our go-to, our mainstay. And then we play around with a lot of other yoga on the side too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would echo that too. I feel like that's like the core of my health routine and keeping my body and mind sort of happy, but it's not always available, of course, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm really liking vinyasa right now. I mean, there's just where we are in Sayulita, that's the primary style that you're going to find is sort of a homebrew of vinyasa. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Do you guys feel like you can practice, like, do like the 26 postures from the Bikram series without the hot room? Like, is that... I'm not trained in it, so I'm just not kind of sure. Like, is that okay, or can you guys do that?
Yeah, you can. I mean, they're just yoga postures the same as anything else, so you definitely can do them anywhere. When you don't do it in the hot environment, you realize how ingenious the series actually is as a combination to the fact that you have the hot room and that you have the mirror. So mm-hmm. It was kind of designed, you know, with that all in mind. But here, I mean, in Mexico, it's warm enough that after you do some pranayama, you get warm enough that you can still do it, of course.
Yeah, yeah, everywhere's a hot room.
Yeah, exactly.
We get to sometimes, I think, like rely on some of the tools in the Bikram class, like having the mirror or having the heat. But when we're practicing the sequence, you know, in a palapa or something, we realize that those things are just tools. And that if you don't have them, you can still challenge yourself in other ways and kind of discover different things about the practice that you wouldn't normally, you know, even focus on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I think that it's important to remember that you can practice anywhere in the world, even if you don't have, you know, everything that you would have at home, like the hot room. It's like you can modify your practice and still make it happen.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of yoga. Even, I mean, depending on which texts you read, but even the invention of a yoga mat is a very Western culture concept. So you don't really need anything. You just need your body and about 2 by 2 feet by 6 feet of space. And you
can
do it.
We've tested that in our RV.
We've tested it.
Yeah. The exact amount of space necessary to do certain postures.
Yeah. It's amazing how much you can do with a small space. There was a guy that I was teaching online, like doing Skype classes with. He was based in the UK and he's like, well, what do I need for these classes? And I was like, you don't really need anything. Like, you just need to show up, just wear something that you can move in. And he's like, well, do I need to like splurge for one of those expensive yoga mats? And I was like, no,
just nope,
lay out a really. Towel, do it on your carpet. Like, as long as you're comfortable, it's fun.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, we're living in 105 square feet of space with four of us and traveling all over the place. So when you live that way, it really highlights how you don't need external things to have a health practice, that anything external from yourself is really an excuse to not do it or to do it. So you just need the mental drive to just make the decision that, you know, you have to keep yourself happy and healthy. So that's kind of the beauty of it, I think, is it makes that makes you hyper aware of those sort of factors.
Yeah, definitely. I would 100% agree with that. And I'm curious, you know, going back to when you guys owned this yoga studio in Red Deer, Alberta, which is not so far from where I grew up. What were some of the biggest lessons that you guys learned from that?
Oh, man. We're both like, oh.
I know. That's a really good question. I think for me, because Josh ended up going to teacher training when I was like 6 months pregnant with our first child, with our son. And that's actually the reason that we decided to send him to training and to open our yoga studio. We were actually, had like put all our stuff in storage. We were on the way to South America to, travel. And when we found out I was pregnant, we decided to open a yoga studio instead, which might seem like kind of, I don't know, like it doesn't make sense, but for us it did. And so I think for me, having our son and then going through two other pregnancies during the time that we owned our studio, for me, the biggest thing I learned was how important it is to try to find that balance between having a business, you know, having a family, kids and a marriage, and also balancing like personal time, like having a personal yoga practice. And I'm not saying that I mastered it, but that was the most important lesson I learned, that it was really important to strive to balance all of those things. And the thing for me that would often like fall short was taking that personal time, like maintaining my personal practice and taking care of myself. And I learned that I really have to put that first. Like, I've got to get my own practice as a priority and have personal time for myself so that I can do a really good job of the business end of owning the studio and, you know, being a good mom and having a good relationship with my husband. That was the most important thing I learned. And I'm still learning.
Yeah. I would imagine that that's something that just continues to evolve, especially as, you know, your kids go into different ages and your career shifts and you're in different places and that sort of thing.
For sure.
Yeah. And I would add, like, that makes sense to me. I think for me, the major highlight, if I look back on the whole time, like right from writing the business plan. Oh, hi, Lex. Her daughter wants to pipe in here, too.
Hello.
Yeah, for me, looking at, like, from the business plan through to, because we literally built the physical studio as well, and then operating the business for years. It's this concept of everything is yoga, that it's like everything I know about business, I know from yoga. And it really allowed us to go into a situation where we got to test that, where you realize that, as Jenna just said, like, you have to have a personal practice so that you're healthy, so that you can be good at your business. On the other hand, you also have to actually put significant, real, intelligent, educated, you know, best business practices into play for your business to succeed so that people can come in and experience your awesome product. You can't just rely on the product or whatever alone either. So it's figuring out, like, yeah, balance, but it's this concept of, like, everything you're doing, it's part of your yoga practice, and being able to simultaneously focus on multiple things. That was sort of a skill that I think it forced us to develop much quicker than we maybe anticipated.
Yeah, definitely. Because we didn't have, a strong business background when we opened our yoga studio. We're like a lot of yoga studio owners out there. We had a passion for the practice of yoga, and we wanted to share it, and we wanted to create community. But as far as business practices go, or business training, like, we really, I mean, Josh had some, had owned some, like, businesses in the past, but we didn't have a lot to draw on. So we really had to continue our education in business, just as you would continue your education in yoga as a yoga teacher.
Yeah, definitely. Was there anything about owning a yoga studio that really surprised you guys, like, that you maybe wouldn't have expected going into it?
Yeah, that's funny. On one hand, that the whole thing was a surprise. On the other hand, no. Like, nothing really surprised us, because in like, you're very idealistic when you open a yoga studio sometimes. So we really believed that our yoga and everything that we were going to teach was going to just be so powerful and helpful for people. They were going to love it, and it was going to be great.
And that really was part of the experience.
Which was part of the experience as well. But on the other hand, what was the big surprise for us, you know, we had a family tragedy, and we had lost a daughter. And that was really, really extreme. Mm-hmm. And this huge community of people, like, got behind us. You know, we didn't, like, reach out to them necessarily to do that, but they just did. And that's where it really hit home hard, how much what we had created, and we can't even take credit for, but, like, what had formed was something that was so much bigger than just a business, or just a yoga studio. You know, it was a larger community based thing. And that was really, that's what took me by surprise. That was pretty fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure that it was pretty, you know, special to have people come together during a time that's obviously going to be very, very, very difficult for you guys.
Yeah.
And so you guys owned your studio for 5 years. At what point were you kind of feeling like, okay, maybe we should make a change, or getting the idea to make the jump to be nomadic?
Well, we had always, like, Josh and I had traveled, like, before we got married and before we opened our studio. And then once we opened the business and had our kids, we still continued, like, several times a year to do trips. And we try to always go once a year at least for, like, 3 weeks to a month and go somewhere and, like, explore. Like, we went to Central America, we went to Ecuador, and we'd, like, rent a car and drive around and stay in hostels and little palapas and all that. And so I think that we always wanted traveling to continue to be part of our life. And it was when we were on a trip in South America that we decided that we wanted to do it more long term. So we talked about, do we, like, hire a manager for our studio, or do we do, like, 6 months in Canada and run the business and then 6 months traveling around? Like, what does it look like for us? And in the end, we decided that the best thing to do would be to sell our business so it was in the hands of somebody who was going to be there full time and really take good care of it and have that be their top priority. And that way we could travel as a priority too without having to worry about like constantly checking back in. So I guess that was about after the 4-year mark that we kind of made the decision that we wanted to sell our studio. And it took us about 6 months to actually complete that process.
Yeah, definitely. That's really cool that you guys had that experience. I feel like we have so much in common, you know, from yoga to being from Western Canada to making the jump to be nomadic. It's really, really awesome to hear that.
Yeah, and I mean, our studio was doing awesome. It was successful. We were happy. Like, we really had a lot of good things going for us. We had a great community that we lived in, and our son was going to a great school. We just, you know, to be true to ourselves, we had kind of, I think, set out what we set out to accomplish with our studio. And for us personally, we just wanted to take our passion for yoga and yoga business and travel and try to like blend all those things together. And we didn't know what it was going to look like when we started traveling, but yeah, it's been really fun to see how it's all evolved.
And I would add to that too, that to me, this really highlights, because when I'm doing business coaching, you know, with studio owners all the time right now. And one of the major conversations we have right out of the gate is the why factor. It's like, why are you doing this? What are you in this for? What's your intention? What's your goal? And we were really lucky, Jenna and I, because we had some really, really powerful mentors prior to us starting our business and even our yoga journey. And they kind of drilled that into us that you need to do some meditation and do some visioning and do some, you know,
introspection
and personal audits to figure out your why. So we kind of had really defined that prior to opening. And the decision to move on to something else really came from the fact that we really did feel like we had done what we had set out to do, and we couldn't envision what the next thing was going to be. So it made more sense to transition to something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I feel like that must have been a hard decision to actually decide to sell it. Like, you know, if everything's going well, and I definitely understand the feeling of like something's just not right, or I need to go, I need to do this, I need to pursue this other thing.
Yeah, and I mean, it was, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but we always try to really make the point that we weren't like leaving because anything wasn't good, or we weren't satisfied or weren't happy or didn't love what we were doing. It was more just, you know, it's okay to just make a change in your life because you want to, because that's what life's about, you know, like following where your heart and your passion really do drive you. So,
yeah, I think it's a lot easier for people who have kind of made those leaps or have traveled before or done that to understand it. I know it's something that I found in my personal life when I'm talking to people. It's like some people get it, some people don't. And it's just like, yeah. I can't really explain it to you. Like, it's just something that I needed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And so you guys took about, you know, 6 months to sell your studio that you'd had for like 4 years at that point. And what was the transition like going from being studio owners to building a business online?
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, online and traveling, like becoming a digital nomad or whatever the cool catchphrase is right now is like, it's totally the new age version of, I don't even know what the equivalent would be anymore, but just of opening a yoga studio in like the early 2000s, you know, it's like, it seems super sexy and people talk about it. And there's a million people on your Facebook feed telling you that they can teach you how to make all this money and just travel wherever you want and live the life you want. And it's all kind of bullshit. I mean, that's not the way it works. You do have to commit. That's the first major thing, is if you're going to do it, you have to go all in on it. And then I think in hindsight, I would tell people that it's exactly the same as any other business. You have to build it up. You have to like take time to put the pieces in play and to reach out and to do the work and to put the hours in and to focus on what your goal is and to really do it. And it will come to fruition just like any other thing that you apply yourself in that way to. But the whole concept of like, all you do is whatever, make some videos and throw them online and then you're going to make enough money to live is kind of silly. In my mind.
Yeah.
And I always find it really comical. There's all these people that are telling people, I'll teach you how to be a digital nomad. And then you realize at some point, they're a digital nomad making money because they're telling people how to be a digital nomad, not because they're doing it. Like, they don't own a drop shipping company, or they're not doing some crazy Amazon store. Like, they're telling you how to do it. You're paying your bill. So yeah, it's just like any other business, is what I'd say. It's where your business exists. That's the only thing that's changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. I feel like the whole like laptop lifestyle, and I mean, I don't hate on digital nomads so much. I feel like that one's okay. But the laptop lifestyle and the photos of like people sitting at like a beach surrounded by water with their laptop, I'm like, that's not what my life looks like, at least.
Right. I mean,
your computer's gonna get way too hot. Like, the sun glaring on it is not pleasant to work on. And like, do you really want to sit on the edge of a pool with your computer that's worth like $1,000 and risk losing everything?
Right.
I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah, totally. I mean, all the other digital nomads that I know, or whatever laptop workers that you meet that are really making it, they're hard workers. You know, they have a craft that they've honed, and they take it seriously, and they go into their space, wherever that is, but it's usually more similar to an office space, and they put some hours in and they work. You know, the difference is when they leave, they get to walk outside and go for a surf or go hike a mountain or do whatever they want to do. So yeah, and then change their locale if they feel like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I would 100% agree with that. I think there's definitely a misconception of what life looks like when you're working on the road. I find that it's a lot more similar to being at home, but exactly what you said, you get to be in another culture. And you know, for me, it's a lot like, you know, Canada's cold right now. It's expensive. I get to be somewhere that's warm, that's more affordable. And it's those things that kind of make it. It's not any different with how many hours I work or anything like that.
Exactly.
Totally.
For sure. Yeah.
And so where did you guys go first? Like, what was the first stop on this, on being nomadic?
Well, we left Alberta in February. So we headed west first toward like Vancouver and Vancouver Island. And then we went south into the States. But we spent a good few months trying to explore BC.
Nice. That's awesome. And this was February 2 years ago?
Yeah, it would have been 2 years ago now. And so then we like did the West Coast thing. We went between the Rockies and the coast all the way down. Finally made it into, which I don't know, when we entered the States, we thought for sure we were going to crush like all of the States.
Yeah.
And we didn't. We barely made it straight north south.
There was so much to do on the West Coast of the States because there are so many yoga studios. It's so dense. And then there's also all the national parks. Like, we went to Yellowstone, Yosemite, went into Death Valley, Joshua Tree, Glacier further north. Like, there was no shortage of things to do. And we really, didn't see nearly as much of the States as we thought we would in 6 months.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, it's such a gigantic country and there's so much stuff to see and do. It's just, I don't know if I'll ever see it all in my lifetime.
Exactly, yeah. Well, Canada is the same too. I mean, now we're really excited about eventually going back and driving around Canada more because it's so epic. It's so big.
Yeah.
You could go for years and never run out of places to see. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And so can you walk me through kind of like a typical, maybe like day while you guys are on the road, or what sort of things you guys do?
Did you want to tell about the other places we went though, Josh?
Yeah. I mean,
I think so first,
oh, sure. I'll just add that in. So, I mean, we went down the West Coast of the States, then we came into Mexico and went down Baja, which was really cool. We took the ferry across to the mainland, did like most of the West Coast, went into Mexico City, spent a long time in Oaxaca, then went down into all the way down into Guatemala and circled around for a bit, drove all the way over to the Yucatan, went all the way back up around the Gulf, all the way to Florida, and then did the whole East Coast of the States, and then turned around and came all the way back down, and now we're here.
Wow, so, that's incredible.
So we've been kind of just circling around. But
and you guys drive everywhere that you go?
Yes.
We've taken a couple of flights, but for the most part, we drive, yeah.
Okay, and do you guys, I know I saw on your website that you guys have like an RV. Is that what you guys drive around in, or do you guys rent kind of from place to place?
No, we're always in the RV, so it's our daily driver, I guess, as well. I mean, we don't daily drive anywhere, but we literally drive around with our house on our back. which is cool with kids because, I mean, we can just pull over and go to the bathroom or make lunch or have a nap or whatever. So
yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I mean, working at and like teaching at yoga studios or whatever, practicing, we just have everything with us. We can just park near the studio. It's great. And then our truck too has a bunch of solar panels and a huge water tank. So we're like totally self-sufficient. We could go park on a deserted beach or go drive up a mountain. So camp there.
Yeah, I think we've definitely done 10 days. We could probably stretch a couple weeks before we'd
run out of any resources.
The only thing we ever run out of is water, really. Everything else we could go for months easy. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. Do you guys have like some sort of hotspot, or how do you guys manage like Wi-Fi being able to like work from there?
Well, that is actually, yeah, we don't. Do we have some sort of hotspot? We've looked into a few things. We have a sat phone. We have our cell phones that we can hotspot, but usually internet is one of the major controlling factors for us, just making sure that we have strong internet somewhere. Mm-hmm. So we do have to schedule ourselves around that. That's kind of how we decide. So yeah, typical day, I mean, there's sort of, at this point, we've calibrated to two sort of typical days, either traveling days. So we try to not have very much work, or we'll literally plan driving from point A to point B where we know there's internet or a good cell reception or whatever to stop to have a phone meeting and then to continue. And traveling days, it's more about the adventure. So we, you know, we look at what's near us that's cool that we want to go see, and we go check it out.
Yeah.
And usually end up just staying in or around that place. But then when we're actually set up somewhere like we are now, I usually work from, you know, 6:30 or 7 in the morning until the afternoon.
2:30 or 3.
Yeah. And then by then, right now our son is in school, but if he's not, then he does homeschool during the day. Mm-hmm. Jenna handles the hard job of chasing our daughter around.
She's two.
She's two.
Yeah. Two with attitude. Yeah. As you hear her now. Yeah.
And she's like, that's my cue.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, and then we go to the beach, we go surfing or something for the evening and start over again. So it's a pretty typical sort of work day. Like we've been saying, I mean, it's not so different than what you would think you would do at home. The big difference, I think, is that we, for the most part, set our hours. So mm-hmm. I can create my scheduler to make sure people are scheduling themselves within certain hours of the day. So I can shift it a little bit earlier like that, which is a nicer time to work for me. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that you guys have been able to find the balance between running a successful online business and then also being able to, you know, spend time with your kids, be able to have these travel adventures, and all from, you know, this RV that you've just been in for 2 years. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, this kind of ties to our previous question about how do you build that business. And I feel like we're getting to a place now where we're feeling comfortable and more happy with the rotation of things. But it really took us at least, I would say, a year to get it all in order, to figure what works. And I think that that's really going to be different for each individual person or family for that matter. So,
and I think the biggest part of the success of our, you know, having like an online business now is the fact that we were on the ground for a long time and sometimes still are, like actually going and practicing at studios or teaching at studios or, you know, having conversations with owners and working on site at studios to help with the business. Like that really got kind of the word of mouth going, I guess, and got us a big enough following that we were able to shift that to being pretty much completely online now that we're in Mexico.
So were you guys doing a lot of the work that you do now, like, you know, consulting with yoga teachers and studio owners before you guys transitioned online? Or was that really something that you like hustled to build up after you were like 100% remote?
It kind of started even when we owned our studio. Like when we owned our yoga studio, we'd have other studio owners come in for a workshop at our studio or something and notice the way our front desk was trained to, you know, greet a new student or whatever it was. And so they started asking Josh to go in and do like trainings with their staff on site. And so studios started contacting us for help on the business end of things even before we sold our studio. So then when we sold it, we basically had more time to devote to that.
Yeah, it definitely
and
grew.
And developing specific programs for studios to follow and teachers to follow and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it definitely grew organically, but it was a little bit of both. You know, it wasn't like we were on the ground and then it just naturally became online or vice versa. It sort of organically grew on the ground and our relationships and contacts through people. But then we very strategically wanted to move it online so that we could free up, you know, our travelability some more. So then we did have to hustle. We had to really push for that. And I mean, I spent 6 months building out my online course and filming everything and editing and then
getting all the
advertising
documents.
And getting documents together and like just building all this stuff out at really no income at all. So that was that during that time frame, like it was stressful because that was the hustle to like make this transition.
Yeah, I feel like we definitely, and it's the same thing with having a brick and mortar yoga studio. We had to just take some leaps of faith, and Josh building and filming and, you know, us financially backing his online course was kind of the first one, because with any new business venture, you just don't really know how it's going to turn out, or it's hard to predict how successful it's going to be or not. So building the foundation online course for yoga businesses was kind of the first leap of faith. And then we were invited to speak at a couple of like yoga retreats and yoga festivals. And again, it was kind of a leap of faith because we didn't really know how it was going to pan out, if it was going to kind of give us the audience that we were hoping for to help promote our products. So we had to go there, you know, at our own expense and at certain times, like really fly somewhere or like drive really quickly to get somewhere. But in all of those circumstances, I can't think of a single one where we like kind of took a chance or changed directions or put ourselves out there or like reinvested ourselves into the business that it didn't work out in our favor. Sometimes it wasn't obvious how it was going to happen, but it did always really help in the end, even if it was just, you know, having a conversation with the right person or, you know, making a connection.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea of, you know, building those relationships, and maybe you don't get that monetary payoff right away, but I think that things like that pay off in ways that are not necessarily monetary, or maybe the monetary, you know, payment comes, you know, weeks or months or even years down the road. And so it's cool that you guys just did that to build all those relationships and to grow your business.
Absolutely. And it's a huge part of traveling too. Like, you can't always predict what's going to be on the other side of something, but if you have a cool opportunity come up, we've really learned that if you have a good feeling about it, that you should go for it, even if you don't know what's on the other side.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I love that philosophy. So I'm curious, like when you guys go into a town and you research yoga studios, you guys go in and your students there, what does that conversation look like? Like, are you immediately talking with teachers and studio owners when you're there, or do you contact them beforehand?
Yeah, we do both. I mean, it's actually funny. I've got a few people on a list that are kind of putting themselves into a beta group where they're teachers, they're not studio owners, and they want to know how to be a traveling yoga teacher in the market right now. Because of course there are a lot of yoga teachers out there. So our experience has been interesting because there's no one thing that works. We've definitely spent a lot of time contacting places prior to us being there. Like, we'll know maybe a month ahead of time that we're going to be in an area, and then we'll reach out. And sometimes that's worked really well. In other times, the studio owners can't, like, they won't even get back to you. They don't even respond to your email at all. So they're just busy and they don't know who you are if they've never heard of you or met you before. So then those often are the places that you roll in and we don't even say anything. We just go in and take class. And the result is by the next day, we're teaching something anyways. So it kind of goes both ways. So I think that's the key, is you do want to just put yourself out there and make it easy for people to see you and to have a conversation with you. And then they just will when they're ready. But it's really on their terms. You can't force it to happen. And then in terms of like talking business and researching studios, that especially, the best business conversations in the yoga world I've had are definitely, or a kombucha, whatever, you know. whatever it is that you're drinking at the time, sort of after you take a class or two. So that's often more just something that has to come about organically.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Do you have any tips for anyone who's listening out there who's like, yeah, I would love to be, you know, teaching more internationally or teaching in towns and cities that I'm visiting?
Yes, I definitely do. I mean, I think we're at a really strange time in a lot of industries, and the yoga industry is not outside of it, but some of the things are actually more extreme. So one of the things is, like, no yoga teacher has a resume, like a real well-done, polished, intelligent, someone's actually looked it over resume. And nowadays, too, you can do some really cool things to sort of build your own authenticity and authority in your specific craft. So I think that so what I mean is, like, you can have a special video of yourself talking about yoga, or some quick clips of you teaching. You can have, you know, a business Facebook page that you then use to actively promote yourself on, or whatever. So it just, I think that if you want to be larger than your locale, you have to realize that as big as you think you are nobody in the yoga world. There are so many yoga people that are just so amazing out there that as an owner, someone who might be looking to hire you, you got to put yourself in their shoes and understand that they have no way to differentiate you from anyone else. So you need to do that for them. You need to kind of put the effort into marketing yourself, basically, and view it as something as important as the marketing end of things. The second piece of that puzzle is just that you have to still hone your craft. Going to a teacher training and being able to teach a yoga class doesn't mean anything. Lots of people mean that. You have to actually continue your education and get good at existing within a yoga studio environment. So one of the big things is, for teachers, there's a lot of teachers, they don't understand how mind body or wellness living or karma soft or punch paths or any of the standard systems that yoga studios use. They can't even sign a class in, they can't sell something, they don't know any of that stuff. And it's easy for them to pass the buck and say, well, no teachers or no owners have ever shown me how to do that. But what they don't realize is that if they go through the effort of getting themselves trained on that, like, figure it out, ask people for help, spend time for free at a studio that you can to learn these things, that immediately enhances your value, your perceived value to a studio owner. So, because whether you can teach the best class or not, if you can't sign it in, the owner or someone else still has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really serving any additional purpose for them.
Yeah, I was going to kind of echo what you're saying, Josh. And I think that we have kind of a unique perspective because we've owned a studio and have hosted visiting teachers. And now we are, like, traveling teachers and guest teachers at studios. And the biggest thing that is lacking with other traveling yoga teachers that we've seen is just, like, a lack of overall professionalism. Like, yeah, for some really reason in the yoga world, it's like, it's okay if you send me your availability as a guest teacher and then I put you on the schedule and 2 days before, you know, you email and say, oh, sorry, my plans have changed and I'm not coming, or like, can I switch this class for that class? Or, you know, I ask them to show up 45 minutes ahead and they're late. Like, just the simple little things of just understanding that you as a yoga teacher are a professional in the wellness industry, and you know, treating it with some degree of seriousness, because it's serious to the students that you're teaching. Like, the class is going to really help them in their life. So I think as a traveling teacher, just to uphold kind of certain standards of professionalism. And oftentimes when we go into a studio and maybe we haven't been scheduled to teach yet, we're just practicing, like, I don't know, I'll help before class and fold the laundry or something, you know, like, just make yourself kind of useful to the team, and that often goes a really long way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just, I think, yeah, just to totally nail the point home, it's like, treat yourself as a professional.
Yeah.
You know, I always say it like this, I don't want to be at, I always say cocktail party. I don't know why no one goes to cocktail parties. You're at a
kitchen party.
You're at a tailgater, and and you're talking with some friends of friends, and they say, what do you do? And someone says, you know, I'm a doctor, and someone says, I'm a lawyer. And then the question is, if you're a yoga teacher, do you say, I teach yoga, I'm a yoga professional, confidently, as if they're your peers? Or do you just say, oh, I teach yoga? Or do you say, well, I teach yoga, but actually am I aspiring to be this? And, or I used to do this job. Like, what, how do you naturally answer? And for a lot of yoga teachers out there, there's not like a shame, but they feel like they're at a lower level than these quote unquote ultra professional jobs. And to me, I'm like, I've devoted more than a decade of my life to this, and it supported our whole family, and it's saved my life, and it have incredible repercussions positively for other people's lives. It is deadly serious to me. So, you know, not yourself so seriously, but just to understand that it's okay for you to be a professional. Don't just be a yogi, be a professional yogi. And if you start to do that, then people will take you that way, and you will have a much, much easier time getting work and then also getting fairly compensated for your work.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm so glad that you brought that stuff up. I came from, you know, a business background, and I entered the yoga world, and I was so astounded by the lack of like business acumen in the industry, which is why I started MBOM to begin with. I've been a studio manager at a studio based in Kenmore, Alberta for 3 years now. And some of the stuff that comes through our inbox where people are like pitching themselves to try and teach there is, you know, honestly, like absolutely shocking to me. Like, I have no idea why yeah. people would send some of the stuff they send. I'm like, this isn't even make me want to respond to you, much less forward it to the studio owner and suggest that we would host you here. Like, you have done nothing to build any sort of social capital or credibility with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I feel like, I feel like as an extension of that, it's more rampant in the entire industry. I like that you say that in like the lack of professional acumen in the whole industry, because it's true on the studio owner level too. It's not to knock on studio owners, but just the truth is most yoga studio owners, they don't open a yoga studio because they're a business person and they like yoga. They open a yoga studio because they're a yogi and they want to facilitate spreading that. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same thing on that level, just in another way, which is just you've got to continue to educate yourself and get better at being a yoga professional and running your yoga studio. And all the resources are available to you out there, but you have to go and get them. No one can do it for you, kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And so I know, you know, we've talked about some tips for teachers who want to travel, and you guys also work with studio owners. Can you talk about some of the biggest things that you kind of advise with studio owners and some of the things that you would recommend for anyone listening to kind of, you know, take their studio to the next level on a business side?
Yeah, I've got a few things I can say about that.
How much time do we have
right here? Yeah. I mean, the couple of things I'd say, just to continue from what we've already said, the first thing I would say is you really need to take it serious that the game of owning a yoga studio has changed. I mean, if we think 6-7 years ago, Instagram didn't even exist. And now in the yoga world, Instagram is like, you like have to be on Instagram, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's funny now when you experience a studio that doesn't even participate on Instagram, for just as an easy example. So because it's changing so quickly, you really need to just get on board with the fact that you're going to be perpetually having to re-educate yourself and to up your game. And that's kind of the fun part if you get on board with it. But if you don't do that, then you will get left behind and you will struggle unnecessarily. So that would be the first major thing I'd say, is just realizing that you've got to take control. And one conversation I have frequently when people call me for a free strategy session is we try to get an idea about where they are. And you don't want to be making a call to a business coach or going and trying to find something out of an emergency situation. You don't want to be thinking, I think my studio is going to close. Oh my gosh, you better go get help. You need to go in and keep educating yourself and get help and get better when you're doing okay, so that you never get to the point where you need that help. You know, it's the more intelligent approach. So,
Yoga is the best preventative medicine.
Yoga is the best preventative medicine. Yeah. If you keep practicing, you don't get injured. You don't wait till you get injured and then practice. It's the concept. So same idea, but then the big thing too is understanding where the industry is at any moment in time. And that can be tricky these days. So I always talk about, you know, the eras of yoga. And if we look back at like the late 1800s, early 1900s, we're in this sort of, in Western culture, this elitist, closed doors, invite only yoga situation. You fast forward to like the 1960s and yoga sort of molds itself into this Zen, flower power, hippie, new age movement. In the 90s, it all of a sudden becomes a fitness fad. And that continued through the early 2000s. And then in around, I would say like 2006, 2007, it switched into the era of marketing, which is where we are now. And understanding that kind of changes how you approach your business a little bit. It means that for the first time in history, your ability to launch, your ability to proliferate your message, your ability to communicate clearly your value proposition to your current and potential clientele is more important than what your product is. And people don't like that, but that's the exact explanation for why a lot of larger corporate run, especially yoga chains, are able to outcompete the small mom and pop or single location yoga studio, because they have the marketing team and budget to just outcompete on the marketing level, even if their product is, and this is very opinion based, of course, but even if their product is inferior. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting transition with the industry. And as you were talking about kind of, you know, this like flower power, hippy dippy sort of thing that it's viewed in the 90s, I think that might be part of the reason why, you know, a lot of yoga teachers struggle with this, like being proud of their career or feeling like it's something that they can do as a career that can be sustainable. I know, like for me personally, like when I told my parents that I was, you know, quitting my corporate job to go get a yoga teacher training, they were kind of like, what? Like people don't do that. Like, what are you doing? That's crazy. Are you okay? Are you on drugs?
Yeah, totally. We have a friend that he left, what was the school he was in?
He was going to be an anesthesiologist.
Yeah. And he was like
about to graduate or
most
something.
Of the way through. Yeah. And he left to go to teacher training, and his family actually staged an intervention because they thought it was so nuts. And he stuck to his guns and still quit and went on.
He's going to open a studio.
Now he's opening a studio like next month.
Oh, that's so amazing. Yeah. I mean, I hope that it switches at some point and that people, I think it's getting there. I think it's probably pretty close, but there's just, you know, some people in the older generation, some of the older teachers who are kind of a part of I think the mindset and the mentality around it is just a little bit different.
Yeah. I think that it is coming around and people are on board with the fact that, you know, personal health, there's all these sayings that have been around forever, but people are actually experiencing them now. Like health is how wealthy you are. Like you've got to be healthy. And the standard medical system model is absolutely fabulous, but it is not built on the concept of ongoing preventative care. So these alternative, usually Eastern-based modalities like yoga tend to facilitate that. And mm-hmm. So people can really empower themselves to, you know, take it into their own hands a bit more. And I think that there's a lot of value in that now. And I think that so that as people get on board with that, they're coming back to the fact that the yoga business concept is necessary because that's the communication system of our culture. It would be really great if you could just open up a studio and people just brought in some cookies and took a yoga class and you taught them and everything was nice. But that's not, you know, people still have to eat and people still have to have a place to live and people still have to buy clothes and everyone's deserving as well. If you own a yoga studio, you totally deserve to be fairly compensated for the unbelievable amount of hours and effort that you put into your business the same as the next person. So I think it is coming around to that, which is positive because it's going to create something that's very strong moving forward, I think.
Yeah, I mean, as yogis and yoga teachers and yoga business owners, we know how powerful the yoga is for ourselves and for the students that we teach. And Josh, when you're working with studio owners or training yoga teachers, you always talk about how it's our obligation as teachers and business owners to continue our education and to, you know, grow our business so that we can continue to affect people so positively.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is this comes back to the why. So what's a tip for a business owner, whether it's a teacher or it's a yoga studio owner? You really have to hone in on what you're doing. Like, why are you doing this? And what is the ultimate goal? What's your real objective here? Mm-hmm. And getting really clear on that for yourself. And money can be part of that. I just need to say that out loud too for yogis out there. Like, is part of your objective to make money? Yeah, it is. So just own it. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's probably not your primary objective. That's a portion of it. But if you really believe in your product, if you really believe that what you have and what you do and what you can offer is going to positively affect someone's life, or even more, you know, change someone's life, or even more save somebody's life, if you actually think that, then you have a moral obligation to try to serve it to them to the best of your ability.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm so glad that you brought up the money point as well, because I think that there's a lot of people who get caught up in, you know, if I really love this so much, maybe I should just do it for free. And I think that it's definitely an easy mindset to get into, especially when you start, you know, diving deeper into the like philosophical side of yoga. It's like, should I be making money doing this? Is it okay? Is there something wrong with me? Am I actually a yogi if I want to get paid for this? And you can get so wrapped up in that, and it just doesn't help propel you forward with your business.
Totally. And you have to like meet society and culture where it's at.
Yeah.
You could give out a ton of free class cards at your business, which we did at one point. Nobody uses them. If you give away yoga for free, people don't value it. They almost have to pay for something in some way. There has to be some kind of exchange, I think, for it to have value to people.
Yeah.
Oddly, where, you know, in the place that
that's
we are
the thing.
At.
It right now, you can't, you know, yoga text and philosophy of how yoga, quote unquote, should be, which is very opinionated these days. There are a lot of factors involved, but the one that is really missed when we're talking about yoga and business all the time is that we're not existing in a yoga business in Calcutta, India. You know, if you have
100 years ago,
either, exactly. So you have to meet culture where we currently exist. And right now, since the dawn of time, there's been some system of exchange that's existed. Right now, money is our system of exchange. So it's not like in the past, people, if you had the Yoga College of India in Calcutta, there was no exchange of money. That wasn't the way that people participated with it, but there were other exchanges. The whole building got built by volunteer work. People donated things. People fed, you know, the people who worked there. There was an exchange that took place. Mm-hmm. Our system of exchange is just money. So if you put negative energy into that money, then it will feel weird and dirty or negative to you. And it's understanding that it's not. It's completely inanimate. It's the energy that you put onto it that means everything. So our system, because of that exchange, as Jenna said, has also created the situation where that's how we judge things of value. And it doesn't matter right or wrong, good or bad. It's factual for the generalized public. So if you are serving a product to somebody that has high potential value for them, like a really powerful yoga class, you must charge them something because that's how they will put value onto it. And then also your time and your effort and your expertise has a value as well. And you should be fairly compensated for that. So there's nothing wrong with, I quite strongly disagree with the people who would say that you shouldn't be being paid for yoga. I think if you love it so much that you would do it for free, that's just going to make you better, but it doesn't mean that you have to do it for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm 100% on board with that. And I think like I was living in a very saturated market when I was a brand new yoga teacher. And I taught a lot of community classes where I was either exchanged a product or a very small monetary amount, or sometimes I even just taught for free. And I definitely found that the classes where I was teaching for free and the people weren't paying anything, obviously I learned a lot from them, but you know, it's the classes where people aren't taking it seriously. You get the people who are kind of like talking in the back corner, which is super distracting as a teacher. And it's just so different from, you know, somebody's paying $19, $20 for a drop-in class and I'm getting paid $50 for my time. Definitely a different vibe in the room.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's space for that too. It's important that there are free classes and community classes and classes in the park and whatever else that are available for people to access. Mm-hmm. For no doubt whatsoever. But I just think that to say that the model itself of teaching yoga should be something that doesn't include exchange of money is not, that's
sustainable.
That's not sustainable in our culture. So that's silly.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So if somebody's listening and they're like, okay, I'm on board with this, I totally get it, but I still don't know how to have that conversation around money with my private clients or with the studio owners that I'm working with, do you have any tips for kind of starting to change your mindset and have those conversations?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are a few like visioning exercises that we put people through. You know, a couple things that are common out there. We do a polarity square. We do a thing called fear setting. So it really is changing your mind because it has to start from you. You have to be 100% on board with whatever you're doing and understand that if we break it down, you know, in a simple view of things, people always make comments like that a dog can smell or sense fear or ill will. or that animals can sense things. We're animals, like we're the top. So our intuitive nature is naturally incredibly strong. We can just ignore it because we have enough frontal lobe development. So what I would say is, if you are not from a sort of pure place and a wholehearted place approaching things like money, like asking for exchange, then people will sense that. And that's actually what they will waffle on. They'll waffle on the fact that you're waffling, not the money itself. And always remind yourself too, like take your perception of money out of it. Don't project onto it. The money is just the exchange. That's not actually what's happening. You're offering a service. It's a hard thing to change. But then the final piece of the puzzle is there are some techniques that you do want to train yourself on that are more business-based techniques, such as understanding how sales conversation should go. So if we use the example that basically all buying decisions are made emotionally first and then backed up with rationale, that means if you start to have a rational conversation with someone first, so for example, if I say, how much do you want to pay for a yoga class, that's extremely rational. Versus if I say, what are you wanting to get out of this yoga class? Well, I want to get this. Yes, I think I can help you if you're telling them the truth. This is what the cost is. So the conversation about the price and the money, that's where we focus all of our energy on. That's not even the conversation you want to have. You want to have a conversation about your value and about what that person's going to get and how you're going to enhance their well-being. What are you going to give them? And look at it as if you're giving something. And when you can come from that place, they will be open to whatever you say, and you'll find the whole thing goes way easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I think that's a great way to approach it, and kind of remembering that, you know, the monetary amount is just what the exchange is. And I mean, I guess you could certainly set up a different type of exchange for, you know, service for service or product for product if you're really uncomfortable with the monetary amount, but remembering that it is just the form of exchange that we're using in this day and age.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the test. So for anyone who listens to this and you're in this situation where you're either a teacher asking a private client, or even if you're a front desk person or a studio owner at the front end of a yoga studio, the next time you're selling someone anything, if they give you resistance, after the fact, take note of where the resistance is in the conversation. So if they're giving you resistance around the money, if they're saying, I don't know, that's too expensive, I don't think I can afford it, do you have a better deal? And that's the kind of conversation, that's a really good indicating factor that you've already messed up about 10 steps ago. So that's not where the problem is. But because that's commonly what we experience, that's where we focus all of our energy on. It's like, oh, it must be about the price. It must be about the money. It's not. It's about the perceived value. It means that before you talked about the money, they didn't believe what you were selling them. They didn't believe what you were telling them about the benefit that you're going to get them. And that's really where the conversation has to be. It's in the open. It's in the value.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And so, you know, if you're getting to that place and it's like, I guess that people aren't really buying into the value of what you're offering, then it's going back to your pitch and what you're selling and really getting clear on, you know, believing in your product and why you're offering it. Is that right?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it starts from you believing in it and then also spending the time to figure out. I mean, this highlights the fact that you're going to have to figure out your language around it. So, no, it's the old idea of like an elevator pitch. In 60 seconds or less, how can you explain what it is that you offer? And if you go to any, you know, old school hot yoga studio, like a Bikram studio, and you look on their website, I'll bet you $10 it says, Bikram yoga is 26 postures and 2 breathing exercises done in a heated room. If I'm a student, honestly, who gives a shit? I don't care if it's 10 postures or 100 postures or 32 postures. Like, what I want as the consumer, I want to know, what do I get? Why would I do this? What is the value that this is adding to my life? How will it positively enhance something for me? And I might be coming into that conversation or into that website already thinking, I want to lose weight, or I want to get flexible, or I want to get fit, or I want to have 6-pack abs, or I want to, you know, stress reduction, or I want whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's the conversation. So when we're talking about good form best practices in a sales situation where money especially is involved, don't even talk about the money. Like, just let that happen naturally as the repercussion of the real conversation, which is about what's the value of your product. So you need to get really clear on what is the value of your product. Don't describe what it is. What is the result? You do this yoga class, you get flexible. If you do this yoga class, you get strong. If you do this yoga class, you lose weight. If you do this yoga class, your back feels better. If you do this yoga class, it's really good to fix your knee. If you do this yoga class, it's very, very relaxing. If you do yoga nidra, it's the equivalent of doing 7 hours of sleep, but you're awake the whole time. You know, whatever it is, that's the language that you've got to get really good at.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. And so I'm curious, what's next for you guys? How long are you guys in Mexico? Where are you guys headed next? What's next for your business?
Well, the idea of us being here in Sayulita is that we've been driving around from pretty much yoga studio to yoga studio nonstop for the last 2 years, which has been amazing, and trying to balance like homeschooling our kids, traveling all over the place, tiny living, developing an online business, working on site at studios. And it's been a lot. It's been amazing, but we want to just like sit still for a little while and really work on the online aspect of the business and let our family just have a break from being in kind of constant motion. So the plan is to be in Sayulita here set up for, I don't know, 5 months, 6 months until May or June. Our son is here going to the bilingual school in town, and Josh has a spot at a chair that has really strong internet. So that's our plan for the next 6 months or so. And then I think we're going to head north again. We really want to go back to Canada and explore more of Canada and work with some studios up there.
Well, yeah, and we're scheduling as well to go to the Roger Yoga Academy teacher training and do some help with training the new yoga teachers there, and specifically on these things we're talking about, or the business end of things. I'm also the keynote speaker at the Original Yoga Association's first ever conference, which will be coming up in, is it March or May?
I think it's in May.
It's in May in Pasadena in California. And there's another teacher training that's reaching out to us as well to go in and just, you know, do some talks at and talk about being a traveling yogi and sort of the business of yoga as well. So we'll be, I think we'll kind of station up here, but we'll be moving around a little bit to stay active in yoga too.
Amazing. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today and for sharing all of your knowledge about, you know, traveling as a yoga teacher, yoga studios, and the business side of yoga.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
And so if people want to learn more about you and what you guys offer, maybe even connect for a consultation or something like that, where can people go to find you?
Yeah, we've got two sort of simultaneous things going on. First off, we do offer a free 1 hour phone call consultation. That's just like a get to know session and talk about, you know, if we can help you or not. So it's pretty low barrier of entry to just sort of feel out if we're a good fit for you and you for us. But my business is called Nomad Business Coaching. And it's nomadbusinesscoaching.com. And then we also are the Nomad Yoga Family, which is like our blog site and travel site, which has some cool stuff on there too.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much for your time today, guys.
Thank you.
All right, there's the podcast episode with Josh and Jenna from Nomad Yoga Family. Go check them out at nomadyogafamily.com or nomadyogabusiness.com. Of course, links, notes, everything is up in the show notes at www.mbomyoga.com. And thank you so much to Josh and Jenna for such an amazing conversation about yoga and yoga business. As well, thank you to the sponsors of the podcast, Ceteris and Fave Yogis. Go and give them a little bit of love. Especially if you're in the midst of taxes or you're a yoga teacher teaching all over the place and looking to streamline your business a little bit more. As well, don't forget Elevate Your Yoga Biz is live. You can find it at bit.ly/yogabizworkshop. And you can find me on social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga, or you can join the private Facebook community at Yoga Business Badasses. I would love to have you there. As always, thank you so much for listening, and namaste.